Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a highly respected and heart-centered stress and TMS coach based in LA. After enduring 16 grueling years of chronic pain and illness, she healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with assisting others in her signature one-on-one program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients learn to get out of pain and heal their symptoms for good. Jeannie and I hear all the time that you're doing the work and you're frustrated because still you have symptoms. In addition, you may feel all alone and unsure of next steps. Here's the thing. You don't have to do this by yourself. She'll pinpoint what's blocking your recovery, create a simple roadmap, and be by your side the entire time. In addition to alleviating symptoms, Jeannie's clients are changing careers, increasing their income, and having more intimate connections in their relationships. Clients report having more energy, they're getting back to the gym, returning to sports, and reconnecting with all the activities that they love most. Go to Jeannie's website. That's JeannieColwin.com, JeannieColwin.com, and book a free chat with her. I promise she's easy to talk to. Plus, you'll get a ton of value too. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy that you're here. It is October the 10th, and as you're listening to this, I am driving up probably about 90 miles north to work in beautiful Bellingham, Washington, and then going to be going down to Seattle for the Seattle Seahawks and 49ers game. I think it's probably been 7 or 8 years since I've been to a Seahawks or to an NFL game. We'll just say that. So I'm looking forward to it. We have not beat the 49ers in 3.5 years, so it feels like time. Speaking of it feels like time, Gemma McFall, she was on the podcast several years ago or a couple of years ago, and we talked about strengths-based work as far as TMS and chronic pain goes. Now we're going to be talking a lot about this stuff, but in the workplace. We recorded this probably a month or so ago, so a little bit of a lag, but I'm excited to have Gemma back. You can check her out, GemmaMcFall.com. That's GemmaMcFall.com if you want to learn more, and I'll put the link in the show notes as well. But here is Gemma and I talking about corporate wellness and corporate TMS. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. With me is friend of the show. It's her third appearance, although the first appearance, I feel like maybe we recorded extra long and that got broken it up into a couple of episodes, but, Gemma McFall, all the way from Dubai, is on the line with me. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Eddie. I'm super excited to be back with you today.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back on. It's quite the time difference. So it's nice that we were able to, it's very early here. It's very late there. I'm not sure that there's a perfect solution when we're on completely opposite ends of the planet. So I appreciate you being flexible for today.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure.
So the last time that we did, and I was telling you, I went running this morning. I was re-listening to our interview. It was October 13th, 2022, episode 245. So if you haven't listened to that one before, I encourage you to go check that out. In that episode, we focused a lot on personality strengths and how they can relate to the TMS model. However, an interesting coincidence is that my day job, I work exclusively in, not as an HR professional, but work with HR professionals. And you have the exact same, you have a very similar background. You work with HR professionals too. And I think that that's, what a small world. And so today we're going to focus a lot on corporate TMS type work, pain at work, things like that. So kick us off, get us started. Tell us about some of the work that you do in this realm.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie. It's interesting. I don't just work with HR people. I used to be one of those HR people. So I was a HR director. Throughout the whole time, I struggled with back pain. And it was only years later, you know, when I'm looking back on all of the symptoms and the flare-ups, how I can see the direct correlation between, you know, stressful times at work, bad bosses, feeling of unfairness, and this type of thing that was kind of triggering all my symptoms. And so now I've kind of gone full circle, and I'm working exclusively now with the chronic pain world, but I go back into corporates and do workshops on TMS in a wellness setting to try to educate people on the fact that the back pain or the migraine or whatever it is they're struggling with isn't necessarily a physical thing. It could well be their job or their boss or, you know, this type of thing.
What's kind of, I guess, kind of run me through the process of how you even get involved, you know, how do you pitch this to companies as a service, or like kind of run me through what the, you know, what the initial pitch is to get involved in something like that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm not sure globally, but here in Dubai, corporates are always looking for wellness workshops. And there's so many people doing their traditional stress workshops or sleep workshops. Yeah. So I just pitch alongside them. But I go in with them specifically to talk about chronic pain. Mm-hmm. So like banish back pain at work, or, you know, I have a different title depending on the company, but the workshop that I do, I tailor to match their sickness statistics. So like if the majority of people are office workers, I will build the workshop to be around that. If it's a commission-based job, I'll build it to be around that. And I have a character in the workshop, and the audience kind of follows the character along with their traditional medical model, their struggles with work and this, that and the other, and then how they kind of come out the other end realizing it's TMS. So yeah.
What talk to us about some of the, what's the reception like from, because I'm assuming that these wellness workshop that you go to these companies, you pitch the idea, you work alongside some people that are in some other realms that are, you know, kind of you know, similar arena, I guess. But you're talking mm-hmm. to the employees of the company, is that right?
Predominantly, yeah. So I actually, to be honest, sometimes the way I get into workshops is I'm into corporates is I've been working privately with one of their senior leaders who's got back pain, and then they're like, you have to come and talk to my staff. So sometimes I go in that way. So it depends. Yeah.
What are, explain a little bit on what you're uncovering. I guess one of the things that I'm very curious about is, because there's just so much pressure within, I was about to say corporate America, but maybe it's corporate Dubai also. you know, ultimately, like I see people all around me that have in the work world that have back issues that pop up that make no sense, or shoulder problems that pop up that make no sense. And I just don't talk about the stuff, the knowledge that I have, unless I'm asked a lot of times. And so what are some things that you uncover as it relates to work, or what are some of the things that, because it seems sort of easy to say, hey, it's stress related, but how deep do you actually go into this as it pertains to work?
I would say that every single person pretty much that I've worked with, it's one of the major TMS triggers is work. Almost always. So I thought it might be useful today to go through a model that was developed around kind of social threats and rewards, because it kind of relates to work, but also outside of work. And I can, with each, there's 5 points within it, and with each one, I can give you examples of what shows up in the clients I work with or in the workshops.
That sounds great. Let's do that.
Okay, so the model I've been that I found most useful to correlate to chronic pain is the SCARF model, which was developed by David Rock, and basically it's 5 domains that influence how our behavior is in social settings. So SCARF stands for status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. So in this order, maybe we can go through each one, and I know for sure you'll have examples from your own experience.
Yep.
But status, for example, is how important we are in the eyes of others. So if, for example, your boss gives you a good telling off publicly, your level of status is going to go down, and you're going to feel triggered, like literally triggered, like it's like a primal threat. So this is a big one. So being ignored, disrespected, maybe left out of a meeting, you know, that you should have been in. These, what happens to us at work, we literally go, oh my gosh, like what's happening? They don't love me anymore. My status has gone down. And you know, it's not just emotional threat. Obviously, it's physical. That's yeah. what we're talking about today, isn't it? So do you relate to that, Eddie?
I do, yes. absolutely.
Have you been left out of meetings?
Not so much the left out of meetings, but the dressing down in front of peers is something that sometimes will happen. And ultimately, like the way to my wife and I were talking about this not long ago, that the way that the things that demotivate me, if you will, as somebody that's in the workplace is, what's the term I'm looking for? I guess like lack of trust or micromanaged. So if there are extra eyeballs on me, or there's more attention spent on me, or I get any sort of a sense of there's a untrustworthy element to me not being able to do my job or things like that. Like that's what really I don't excel at that. Like for a lot of people, if they're sort of pushed, they find it motivating, and I find I withdraw, like I retreat a little bit. And so it's not motivating to me. It's actually quite the opposite versus having the confidence to just, hey, like he knows what he's doing. We can give him some tips along the way versus I'm going to be on you all the time, involved in all your stuff. Like that, that is not helpful to me. And it never has been, whether it is as a corporate employee or as an athlete or, you know, whatever the case is, that stuff is never motivating to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. And you've just jumped forward to autonomy, which is the A in the SCARF model. So if someone has no autonomy to do the work they want to do in their way, again, it's a trigger. It's literally a trigger for TMS. And it's interesting. I thought you may resonate with this because when we met last time on the episode, you have responsibility as one of your natural strengths, which means, you know, are you questioning me? You know, it's quite quite triggering. So if we jump back to the C, certainty, jobs used to be for life. You would start a job and you would retire having had pretty much one job your whole life. Whereas now people don't have that level of certainty about the future. And when we don't feel safe, again, it's a threat response. So another example of this, I'm thinking from my own journey. I had no certainty over if or when I would ever get rid of my back pain. And that lack of certainty causes causes more stress, you know. So now when I work with clients, I get that certainty right off the bat in the first session. You know, like they have to envisage where they want to be at the end of the coaching. Otherwise, if you can't even imagine it, you'll never get there. So this is a way to create more certainty. We talked about autonomy. The next one's relatedness and how safe we feel with others. And I think, before COVID, most people worked in offices and there was this kind of social thing and our nervous systems all regulated against each other and it was kind of healthy. Now there are so many people working alone. It's hard to actually connect with people. So when we don't have connection and we feel isolated, again, that's another big trigger. So I've seen recently this has gone up and up and up. I had a client recently and she has pain when she's working from home and no pain when she's in the office.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, but of course she put it down to her chair at home is not as comfortable as the chair in the office. So, but obviously we know that that's not true.
Yep.
So that's relatedness. And the last one's fairness. So if we feel like we're being treated unfairly, that's a trigger. The biggest one being pay. If we feel we're being paid less than we should be for the job that we're doing or less than somebody else, that's a trigger for the nervous system. So, I mean, all of these things that I've mentioned, there must be tons of managers listening on the call today on this episode. Managers can counteract all of this by giving more recognition, more praise, more, you know, support, more communication, just doing the opposite of everything we've just talked about to create that safety.
Is this, maybe this question won't make sense, but is this kind of like a global model in the sense of like, because these things seem very reasonable, but there are lots of examples throughout my career where it's almost like the manager looked at this as a blueprint of, or it was almost like a GPS of how they manage. They're like, you know, they give little certainty. They give no autonomy. They don't relate to people and they're not fair. You know what I mean? They kind of have all these. Is this something that, you know, does it transcend really just about any manager? Like, is it something that all of them can kind of,
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, 100%. This model was created in 2008, I think. But it is really funny when you go, anyone can Google scarf model David Rock and it will come up with loads of examples. But it's basically like leadership 101. If you go through this as a leader and do the good side of it, you will create kind of a reward response in the people and they'll feel safe. You do the wrong side and you'll create a threat response and people dread coming to work. So, I mean, I do a lot of work around Gallup, as you know, from the strengths, but Gallup does a report every year where they talk about the biggest stressors and engagement in work and stuff. And it's so obvious that we leave a boss, not a company. Nobody leaves a company, you leave a boss.
What are the, I should have asked you this before you said that sentence, but can you talk about some of the longer term or bigger impacts to a company if they have managers that, you know, that they engage in some of these poor behaviors?
So, what do you mean?
So either statistics or, you know, what actually, what's the long-term impact of their employees and their employees' impact at work if these things are, you know, a part of the equation?
I see what you mean. Well, so 70%, so direct manager, your direct manager accounts for 70% of the team's engagement. So if you have a poor manager, 70% of them are going to be disengaged. But there's different levels of disengagement, right? So Gallup says you either are engaged or you are not engaged or you are actively disengaged. Now, is the actively disengaged people that are the issue? Because an actively disengaged person will go around kind of boss hating and kind of creating little silos. And you know what it's like when you're in a toxic environment. However, I do see a correlation between clients that I have with pain and those who are actively disengaged. And I think what happens is, or what I kind of notice happen, you hate your job, so you go home to your partner and then you replay the entire day of how stupid your boss is, how awful the company is, and da, da, da. And then your partner's like, yeah, your boss is a real idiot, like, oh my gosh, you are so right. But of course your partner, your friends, everyone, they're all going to agree with you because they're your friends. So then it kind of fuels this fear.
Yep.
Which then triggers the symptoms even more. So it's like you have a terrible day and then you repeat it all at nighttime when you go home.
Over and over again. Yeah, totally. What are, I guess, like where you're doing these presentations or you're meeting with managers, and is it, you know, because I see a lot of this when it comes to TMS work, more so like, hey, I am an enraged person, or yes, I have anger, or whatever. Like a lot of it is like you have to look inward and you have to admit some things to yourself. Otherwise, it's never going to work. Is this kind of the same way where, you know, really in order for this to work, like manager sort of has to stop and say to himself or herself, like, I'm making these mistakes and I, you know, I have to make a change. Like what's some of the experience that you've had in working with leaders on this stuff in particular and their response to it?
It's a good question. So if I'm working with a leader who's got chronic pain and it's because of the behavior that they're doing at work towards their team,
yep.
Is that what you mean?
Yep.
Honestly, I've got to be honest, it's not usually the behavior that they're doing to their team. Like the behavior that they're doing towards their team is probably a little bit snappier than usual, purely because they've got pain.
Well, hold on. I need to rephrase that. If you're speaking to, and maybe this isn't part of what you do, but I'm thinking about how managers may attend your workshop and you're pointing out these things about the impact that their attitudes and their actions are having on their employees. Do you ever have managers that are like, oh my gosh, that's me. I'm really screwing this thing up. That's more what I mean.
I see what you mean. I thought you meant if I was working privately with the leader. Because what I was going to say on that is it's not usually the leader that's the issue. Yeah. It's the leader's boss that's the issue. It always seems to come down. So when I do the workshops, I do not single out anyone. I talk to everyone as if they are an employee, because everyone has a boss, right?
Yep.
So I don't actually get them to kind of say yes or no, like I do these behaviors, I don't do them. I get them to think about how they feel when those behaviors, if those behaviors are done to them,
yep.
if that makes sense.
Yep.
So then that, and the penny drops, you know, like just because they know how they feel and it cascades downwards, because most people tend to copy the behavior of how they're managed. They manage the people in their team the same way.
Yep.
But one of the things that's a bit of a light bulb for most people is when I point out that if the leader's nervous system is dysregulated and they're like in fight or flight, the entire team's nervous system regulates up to that same level.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a stressed boss, you have a stressed team.
Yep. Yeah.
So and that's the point where they're like, oh, yeah, I should possibly do something about my stress level for the sake of the team, not for themselves.
It's probably going to be the same as if we're talking about just kind of typical TMS work, but are there certain ailments that seem to impact people when, you know, we're talking about work pain, if you will, like ones that you see pop up more than other things?
Definitely. I would say the musculoskeletal stuff tends to be more work related things. Whereas the fibromyalgia, this type of thing, tends to be more to do with trauma, childhood trauma, I would say. And that's a big generalization, but that's just the pattern I see. But that also could be because my particular thing that I had was back pain. So I tend to attract clients with a similar background to me.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. And in the office, it's very easy to blame it on the desk, the chair, the table, the keyboard. You know, because we've been programmed to believe that sitting at a desk causes X, Y, and Z.
Yep. What, when you're working with an employee or you're having a conversation with an employee that's having these kinds of issues, they've identified that their manager is doing all the wrong things when it comes to the scarf model. And then, that manager is probably their manager that's also doing all the wrong things when it comes to the scarf model. How do you work with the employee though on what can they do about it? Because ultimately, they're not likely to be able to call their manager and say, hey, you're doing the scarf model wrong. And so stop being a chump and change your attitude. So how do you work with the employee to be able to work within the confines of that?
Yeah, do you know, I love that. I wish they could. That would be great, wouldn't it? So one of the things I'm asked is, you know, like, do I need to leave my job to get rid of the chronic pain?
Yep.
And for that same reason, right? And I would say it depends. If the job lights you up more, you know, and you can find internal motivation to do it, then don't be quitting just for a boss, right?
Yeah.
But I think it helps to have this language. So if you feel triggered by your boss, you can literally go down the scarf model and go, why did this feel so triggering? And then you'd be like, oh, it's because of fairness. This didn't feel fair. And just acknowledging like, hey, this didn't feel fair. It almost helps you to realize that you have a choice whether or not you want to respond to that. Whereas when you don't know why you feel triggered, it's very hard to move past it. You don't even know what to journal on or anything, because it's like, it's just up in the air. But almost every single thing that could happen to you at work, you could tie back to this scarf model.
It seems like, in that vein, it almost seems like I've talked about this on the show before, but a lot of times it seems like one of the anecdotes for being able to reframe situations or issues that happen with you or traumatic experiences happen with you, if you can sort of take a step back and almost view it in like a third party, like can you have like an outer body experience and can you look at this situation completely objectively and say, you know, like this was terrible, but like almost being able to see it. Sometimes like you can't see like the forest through the trees sort of thing. But with this, it almost seems like maybe in doing that, stopping and slowing down, and you know, this felt like it wasn't fair, and maybe finding a past event that also didn't feel fair, and that's probably why it's amping you up. But do you find that employees then develop maybe a little bit of empathy for their manager? Because then they start, you know, as an employee, I may start to see, okay, my manager's being a total chump, but he's also being treated like total crap from his manager. Like, do you find people sort of can slow it down and then they almost develop empathy for the person that is above them because the person two levels above is probably being terrible to them too? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So, and going back to your thing about how, like, an employee can't just go to their boss and say, hey, you're a chump, I want you to change. Once you've got this language, you can, like, reflect on, like, hey, what just happened in a, you know, in a meeting? And then you can realize, like, oh, you know, I wasn't invited to the meeting, which affected my status. Then you've got the language to go to your boss and say, hey, you know what? This didn't feel fair, which is one of the SCARF model, yeah. And it made me feel X, Y, and Z, right?
Yep.
So it's a lot more constructive. I've forgotten what your question was.
That's okay. I was asking you if you tend to find that employees develop any amount of empathy for their manager who's given them so many problems, because maybe they can start to see, hey, like, yeah, my manager is being terrible, but their manager is being terrible to them. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. So we would probably use the word compassion. So they can have compassion for their manager. Doesn't make it okay what the manager's doing. But one of the sentences that seems to work really well is to say, you know, he's doing the best he can. If he could do better, he would.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes a lot of the heat out of it. But I really, one of the biggest game changers for people is just to stop moaning about your job and your boss, because every time you do it, it just activates that like stress thing.
Yeah.
And like when you go to work, you know, you go out the house and you say like, I get to go to work today, not I have to go to work today. Mm-hmm. That small reframe makes a huge difference.
Yeah. One thing that I do have done in the past, in instances like this, if I have a manager that's, you know, driving me a little batty, and one thing that this sounds weird, I think you'll understand though, is that I think about it as like, this is all a freaking movie anyway, and they're playing a character, and being able to like kind of take the emotion out of it and just say like, they're playing a character and you can play a character too, and that none of this stuff even really matters in the end. I mean, it kind of sounds like a little bit of like a little woo woo, but a lot of times that's how I see situations. Like when people act a certain way, or they're, you know, they're acting like I talk to my daughter sometimes about people that, you know, wrong her at school or whatever, things like that. And a lot of what I explain to her is like, these people are playing a character. It's based off the expectations that they think that other people have of them. And that sort of almost like takes the pressure, takes the edge off a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know, I go one step further, and I would have them imagine that their boss or whoever is the antagonizer is like a karate master or something. And, you know, like if you're learning a martial art, mm-hmm. and your teacher pushes you down, you don't get angry. You just get back up, mm-hmm. and you correct your technique, and then they push you down again, and so on and so on. If you're working with a bad boss, it's like that. They're testing you. You get to learn to be stronger. You get to learn to, you know, test whether you react or you respond. And so I almost see, even in my own life, at any difficult situation, I think, right, this is just going to make me a better person in the long run. It's like a training school.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. Do you do this is it all lecture, or is there any, like, is there homework, or are there worksheets, or are there like kind of run through your process a little bit as we get to the end here, as we wrap up?
Yeah. So, well, with the corporate workshops, I do 90 minutes. It's just, it's very simple. There's no pre-work, there's no homework. We just follow through. I basically introduce them to TMS, but link it very much back to their workplace. And you can see the aha moments happening, you know, and then towards the end, I leave them with I have a quiz on my website. It's like a free assessment. So then they go away and they do that, which has got more little videos in, which explains why certain personality questions are being asked, and why stuff about the past, because there's only so much you can cover in 90 minutes. But this tends to work really well, like really, really well. And I've had people come to me after the workshops. And I had a woman very recently. She used to have 5 headaches. I think she called them headaches. Yeah, 5 headaches a week, every week for months and months and months. She actually listened to the workshop twice on 2 different days. And then her headaches went just from listening to the workshop. Isn't awesome. That like such a cool, that's such a cool book cure?
Yeah, that's awesome.
But I do think there's a lot of people sitting in the room that have got a niggly thing, like a shoulder thing or whatever, that's not that bad. And it may just be enough to get them off that fear cycle and back to work and stuff. So yeah.
Your website, it's GemmaMcFall.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think I'm the only person in the world with that name. It's so good.
That's something else that we have in common, because I don't think that anybody else has Eddie Lindenstein as their name either. So
yeah.
One thing that's funny, though, just related to that, my wife, her and my aunt actually share exactly the same name. And so that's funny, because you would think that there can only be so many people that have this, you know, last name, and then you throw a first name in there with all the first names that exist. And then my aunt and my wife happen to have the exact same one. So, you know, is what it is.
That is spooky.
Well, Gemma, this don't hang up, but we'll end the interviews, but don't hang up, because there's no way for me to other than you just hanging out on the line. But thank you for being here. If you wanted more information, go to GemmaMcFall.com. That's GemmaMcFall.com.
Super.
Cool.
Thank you, Eddie.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Gemma.